best thing o'clock. And it's worth noting that this is our first show in the new year.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I don't like them, but the idea of New Year's resolution, basically because every New Year's resolution I've ever made has wound up being sad and like immediately broken. Just, you know, quit smoking. How many times did I resolve to do that before I finally did, you know?
But you did it.
I did it. Just not at the New Year. So in the spirit of that, what are you looking forward to best thing-wise in 2015? Leah?
I'm looking forward to the new Modest Mouse album. I'm obsessed with Modest Mouse, if y'all know me. What's the laughing for, well, Alex?
I mean, I'm just, you know, you did mention how much of a huge fan you are, so I'm not, this is, I'm laughing for you, not at you.
Oh, perfect. it's their first album in 8 years, and I'm just so excited for it. That's all there needs to be said about it. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Nice. Tess?
My best thing is, I guess, a resolution that I made. I like resolutions. Okay. I think they're nice. I think we should have more holidays that celebrate acknowledging the passage of time. I think it's really nice. Mm-hmm. Anyway, my resolution or thing I'm looking forward to in 2015 is I realize I'm an adult and I will wash my face and brush my teeth and floss and mouthwash every night before I go to bed. There's no excuses anymore. And I've done it every night thus far.
Nice.
So, yeah.
I've heard that brushing your teeth at 9 p.m. is also a good way to not eat food late at night, because once you brush your teeth, subconsciously maybe you don't want to, you know, right, do the 10:30, make a bowl of popcorn, whatever.
I don't do that, but I'll do like the 10:30, two glasses of wine,
sure,
type thing. So
there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna fight that.
I have no resolutions to stop doing that, but I will keep to my
nice name.
Yeah. What about
very
you,
fun,
Alex?
When I was a kid, like a little kid, I was a huge bath person. Mm-hmm. Probably until about the age of 9, I vastly preferred to take a bath rather than take a shower. And then because of time and necessity, and also I got very tall, it's less fun to hang out in a bathtub. Mm-hmm. But I worked from home all last week and I took a bunch of baths, and I'm gonna not necessarily resolve, but I'm gonna try and just take more baths and just hang out listening to some George Harrison, reading a book in the bath. I'm going to get into bath bombs. Those look really fun. They look really fun.
You have to get one of those, like, glitter bombs.
I want them so badly.
Glitter bombs.
So that's my 2015 is, like, take more baths, get into bath bombs. You know.
I'm excited.
Relax more.
If we're talking strictly resolutions looking forward to, I'm looking forward to actually moving this year, because I got an iPhone 6 for Christmas, and, you know, it has the steps count, and I did not realize how sedentary I am. I mean, when I was at the U, I'm sure I was walking, like, all the time, and my steps were through the roof, but, man.
Office life.
Cubicle, sitting down, not moving.
It's not easy when it's 0 degrees out either. You'll have to like walk up and down the stairs of your apartment or something,
right? Because it tracks flights of stairs as well.
That's so cool.
That's a good resolution though, just move more.
Move. And in the spirit of moving, let's get to talking here. I'm Leah Garris.
I'm Alex Gotterud.
And I'm Tess Weinberg, and this is Pop Till We Drop.
So people say that we, speaking collectively here, are the selfie generation, and it is just sort of, it follows that we're self-conscious all the time about what other people think of us. And what you will notice if you read any sort of cultural criticism of the last few months, year or so, is that people hate millennials. People hate us, what we stand for, which I don't know, what do we stand for? Anyway, there's a lot of ire and a lot of just sort of negative thought directed at young people for reasons that are so inexplicable. And I just want to dive into it because it's a weird headspace to be in, to think about how much people are thinking about the choices you make in movies and music, and whether you're not renting an apartment at too late an age, or whether you're making enough money. These are weird things to think about. And it's just, it's strange. Strange to me.
I feel like now, so we're the selfie generation, and I feel like we are criticized for being really self-absorbed and self-conscious, right? But I think we're also self-aware. Mm-hmm. And from that has come this awareness that people don't like us, that we're this kind of irritating generation that's coming up and making these new products or new startups and thinking that we know everything. And it's kind of come out that millennials realize the self-hate and then are kind of getting on top of it, you know, mm-hmm. and then it's like overcoming it. Like, no, we know and we're better than that type of thing, which I think is funny.
It's like when people used to have semantic discussions about hipsters insulting hipsters, mm-hmm. you know, when people use hipster as a negative and then someone replies with, well, but you're a hipster, that kind of thing.
Right.
Millennials are sort of at the same point where some people are moving on to more traditional, older definitions of success, whether that's like an office job or whatever, while others are innovating and starting companies and coming up with new products or just still having fun, mm-hmm. which is still perfectly acceptable. And yet people have such a down reputation of millennials. And I really don't know if it's warranted. But as you're saying, I'm so self-aware that I can't stop thinking about these topics.
Right.
I don't know.
I grew up in a different sort of household. I was an oops baby, or as my parents call it, the caboose.
Ooh.
My sisters were born in 1980, so they're kind of right on that, like, that edge. I mean, depending on who you ask, it's like either 1980 or 1982 is the cutoff between Gen X and millennials, right?
Oh.
And so my household is kind of different in that they're Gen Xers, but they're semi-millennial, and I feel that hate from my sisters. I really do. I remember when my sisters were looking through my Twitter and my Instagram over the holidays a couple of years ago, and I had selfies, of course, like any other millennial. Mm-hmm. And my sister was like, I hate selfies. I hate them. And, you know, I just said, why? You know, they're so, you know, self-absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
Absorbed, right. Mm-hmm. And then I said, well, what about, you know, like, it's nice having the camera turned on you and, like, presenting yourself, saying, I feel good about myself, mm-hmm. and this is how I want to present. And also, what's the difference between if you take it and someone else's?
Yeah, and you still choose to post
like
it.
Like, if
right.
you
right.
ask someone to take your picture, like, at a restaurant with your, like, girlfriend or something, what's
right.
the difference between, like, taking?
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You still want your picture taken, and that's fine.
Right.
I think it's important to note that people have a problem with the idea of a selfie specifically, and you know, oversharing. I remember, you know, 5 years ago, you couldn't stop thinking about oversharing. Like, that was the big buzzword. Are people mm-hmm. revealing too many personal details on a stage that is kind of limitless? But it's, to me, it's just a reflection of the vanity and self-centeredness of, you know, what people associate with Hollywood. And if anything, it's aspirational in a way to be like, this is a picture of me, and it's being treated in such a glamorous and, you know, self-memorializing way as you would see in like an Us Weekly photo shoot or something. People want to be remembered and leave this wealth of.
So you think it's more like aspirational than a quality of millennials, or do they go hand in hand?
I think it's just a more honest reflection of what a social trend has been mm-hmm. for the last 50 years in like the modern sense of celebrity. People have always, you know, it used to be that you would sing along in the bedroom mirror with a hairbrush,
yeah.
you know, but now you just,
I don't know about
now you vine it,
that.
You know,
yeah.
you vine it, you, yeah. You snap a selfie.
So now we just finally have the platforms to make those things.
And older people are jealous of it.
Do you think it's a jealousy thing?
Because they would feel weird if they did it and
also,
their peers.
Backing up, I don't understand how anyone can say that 20-somethings are somehow the most self-centered generation when there is a generation of people who refer to themselves as the greatest generation. I am just
boom.
Gonna, I'm like, there's nothing more self-aggrandizing than I'm the greatest. Sorry about it. I think people are jealous.
Yeah.
Like there's an honesty and openness that comes with being younger now, and part of that may be, it may result in more questionable decisions as far as what people post and what people are willing to share with others. But on the whole, it's just, I think it's just more real than very structured, very scripted. It was like the difference between the Kim Kardashian magazine photo shoot, which everyone says is, you know, beyond reality. It's just a total artificial creation, and Kim Kardashian selfies. Like the world that is between them is so wide, the gulf. And that's the difference between what we're able to realize through, you know, essentially being the selfie generation and what you would find in an issue of Playboy 30 years ago, you know?
So it's the platform that matters.
Yes. And the idea of just being open with yourself and who you are to a wider audience than, you know, relying on a photo director and, you know.
I think, like, my grandma never talks about herself. Like, I have to pry information out of her. We'll go to brunch and she'll keep asking me questions, right? And then I'll ask her one question and she'll flip it back on me. And I think that in previous generations, it's been looked down upon to talk about yourself, like to actively go into a situation and be like, this is what I did today, and this is what I ate, and this is how many steps I took, and whatever. And now that's kind of how our lives revolve around. And like last night I was at dinner with my brother and some of his friends and his girlfriend, and everyone is talking over each other, talking about themselves and their day. And not that that's a bad thing, but that's how conversations go now. You're not waiting for someone to ask you. If you don't get in there and present yourself how, you know, you want to be presented through a selfie or whatever conversational means, like, you're not going to be part of the conversation anymore.
Mm. Part of it might also be that our communication, whether it's through social networks or, you know, just talking to each other over a dinner table, is much more universal and kind of globalized, and older standards in what you would share with people or what you would publish about yourself would be sort of more regionally informed. It's kind of a Minnesota thing. Like you don't want to talk about yourself too much. You don't want to seem vain. But now, like, the idea of sharing everything is kind of universal. And our generation is sort of the first one that has had that benefit growing up from the very beginning.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think online I talk about myself and usually, you know, the people that are closest about me. But in real life, I am very much like your grandma, Tess.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you are. You are.
I ask questions, and it's because I'm introverted for the most part and feel, you know, like I need to ask other people questions because I don't feel comfortable talking about myself in real life.
Mm. So you think that maybe the millennial thing is just a URL persona versus a in real life?
I don't know. What do you think?
I guess so much of our existence is online. Like, it's hard to it's hard to distinguish between the two.
I think it's very interesting what someone would tweet as opposed to what someone would say to a stranger next to them on the bus. Like, I used to be a very forward Twitter user, by which I mean rude, by which I mean, like, insulting people I would run into in public. And, you know, just being...
Get off my lawn!
Yeah, just kind of being too snarky for my own good. And that would not be a reflection of what I would ever do in real life. But the sort of, even though my name was on it, it felt anonymous and it felt, you know, somehow safer than I would never say these things about, like, a business that I had just gone into, get bad service and then complain about it on social media. I would never say what I would say on Twitter to a person working at a counter somewhere.
Yeah.
But I realized that was a bad, possibly sociopathic behavior to have, and I quit doing it.
No, I did that once. I tweeted, I didn't even tag, like, the place. It was a grocery store, but I said, like, the bread or the bagels from this place are not very good. And I just thought it was funny. I don't know why I thought it was funny, no. But I did. And then the store tweeted back, like, they found that. Mm. I didn't tag them or hashtag it or anything. Mm. They found me and, like, sent me a private message and were like, we'll refund you right away. Like, so sorry. And I was like, oh, I'm not trying to, like, ruin your reputation. I just thought it was kind of funny. And it's like that, you know, I would never say that. I would never ask for, like, a refund.
Rush up to the counter with your bad bagels.
Yeah. So maybe that is a sociopathic behavior.
In some way,
millennials sociopaths by nature?
Is that what's going on? Is that where our self-hate derives from? It's like we're aware of ourselves and all of the stuff that we do that's self-absorbed, but we can't stand ourselves? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, I would say yes. There's a lot of self-defeating behavior in, you know, people say that, and we've talked about this on the show, that somehow social media is supposed to have translated to more connectedness and, like, action in the world and good deeds being done. But really, it just, like, it allows a forum for negativity, which, you know, there are thousands of examples of, and just sort of cynical behavior. And I think that part of being cynical is realizing that you are and being very sort of cold and self-aware about things. And I don't know if that's as a result of taking so many selfies. I don't know how.
I wonder if people are going to start, or millennials are going to start trying to change the culture of the millennial and the practices of the millennial to distance themselves from what the perception of the millennial is.
Mm. Mm.
You know, like how the same thing happened with the hipster throwing back and forth. You know, I wonder if people are going to try to stop being titled that if it's become such a negative connotation.
I think, yeah, I mean, I don't like it when people refer to me as a millennial.
No, it feels bad. It feels negative to me.
But also, we were raised to reject labels. So I
also
think
I'm a really sensitive person. So
that too. Yeah.
We're the participation generation.
Yeah, you did great because you showed up.
Okay, so there's all this talk about millennials and stuff. What would you guys say to other generations? You know, what is your response to their hate of us?
I've read a few different posts on social media from friends that I have that are maybe 40 years old, so in that in between the generation that has kind of gotten ignored lately. And it's like, yeah, like, we're great too, or like millennials are getting all the attention, but we're awesome and we've done all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I'm kind of like, it's like youth envy almost. And I know that sounds like a little bit nasty, but that's kind of how I feel. Or like almost like jealousy, but not in such like a gross term, but like as generations, you know, keep happening, new things are going to be invented, and are like each generation will be forgotten about. That's just kind of the nature of how things happen, right? So I don't know. I can't. It's kind of like, well, this is just how things happen, right?
is
what I would say.
It is. I just turned 25 and I'm practically dead, so I can't wait to be totally and completely out of the loop.
Entirely irrelevant.
Oh, it's going to be great. All the pressure will be off. That's the thing. There is, you know, when people focus their attention on one, you know, basically the now generation, the youngest active generation, it's a lot of strange pressure, and I don't know where that comes from, whether that's just a result of having a spotlight shined on you, which, you know, we say we want that to happen when we tweet or when we post things on social media. But when it actually does happen, when something appears in the New York Times essentially accusing you of being lazy because you didn't study marketing or something, or you didn't study electrical engineering, that, you know, that's the thing, is that now the conversation has shifted into what's coming next, where people say, you know, our kids aren't going to be able to compete with, name a country that is somehow going to displace the United States. Our kids aren't learning enough math or technology or whatever. I didn't learn any of those things. I did like the meandering liberal arts education, and I learned a lot about radio, but that's not what will pay the bills, according to the New York Times. And it's, you know, it's kind of weird to be told that you've made a wrong choice, especially because we are the participation generation. I thought that just by showing up, I would somehow win.
You get a gold star.
Thank you.
It's funny because my parents, like when I was growing up, were all about the participation generation. They're like, oh, you're so great. You guys got the last place in the soccer tournament, but you are so wonderful, and I'm so happy mm-hmm. that you feel special. And now they're seeing the results of that, and they call my brother and myself lazy, oh. and they hate millennials, or they just say, you know, they think negatively of it. So I think it's funny, like, yeah, maybe we should be careful what we teach our kids.
It is the fault of our parents, and that is the end of the discussion.
Done.
How old are they?
50 and 55, so they're kind of at the tail end of the baby boomer generation. Mm-hmm. And you know, I love my parents a lot, and they are great parents. but I think, you know, they feel like my brother and I are lazy, or we're spoiled as kids. And my dad actually said something to me. He was like, "What does your generation even do? Like, you guys get all this press and all this coverage, and you're not even doing anything. Like, what are you mm-hmm. doing? Like, nothing you do is tangible. Nothing's measurable that you do."
Sure.
And that really, really bothered me. Like, it hurt, you know, it, like, my sensitive self, it hurt my feelings. And I was like, maybe the stuff we're doing isn't tangible in the sense, like, we're not moving literal mountains. Like, maybe we're not, there's not a ton of us that are in the field, like, sowing dirt. I don't know.
Sure.
But, like, the stuff that we're doing is a lot less tangible in the sense that it's digital. Like, yeah. I don't know if you,
right.
you know, you can't put that in a space necessarily. Yeah.
Content producers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but mm-hmm. if it exists in this realm that can be deleted, you know.
Sure. That feels... Yeah, and that's a source of anxiety, too, for a lot of people in our generation, that, like, whether or not the stuff you're creating and the stuff you're doing has any, like, downloadable, actual, real-world quality. And I think that's why so many of us have gone to the, like, I'm going to make heritage denim jackets, or I'm going to make pickles, or what, you know, just the sort of off the wall, easily hated ideas that people have to actually manufacture something and create a real world product. People also take a crap all over that because it's not somehow acceptable, as though, you know, working in an insurance company, or one of my parents and many of my friends' parents were in academia. Like, that was a normal thing to do, even though that's more intangible than anything.
Yeah.
Like, you're just saying words to a child, an adult child, I should say. Like, there are some very childlike college students.
When I tell my parents what I do for a living, they don't get it. I'm a content producer. I'm a digital producer. And they still don't get it. They don't see how it can be a life, you know, long career. But to your point about your parents, like, my parents are hella old. Like, I was an oops baby, like I said, and, you know, my parents are very much baby boomers, and I don't think they know, like, I don't think they think I can live on my own without their guidance. Like, they hold my hand on everything. Like, my mom called me last night and she said, "You have to deposit that check. You have to file that insurance claim. You have to, you know," she has this, like, to-do list for me. And I'm like, "Mom, I already have that on my to-do list.
That.
It's in my iPhone."
Yeah.
Speaking of intangibles. And everybody's parenting style is different, and everybody has grown up differently. But the thread that I always see is, like, our parents wanted to be cool parents. Like, they came out of the 60s and 70s, like, they're cool, kind of freewheeling childhoods with, like, "I'm not going to be like my dad was. I'm going to be nice, and I'm going to, you know, listen to music with my kids, and I'm going to go biking with my kids," whatever. And then all of a sudden, there was a point at which parents had to become real parents, you know, not just, like, friends who also are your family members. So for some people, that was, like, in high school, you have to buckle down now and, like, start applying to colleges and thinking about a career, that kind of thing. Or it could have come much later, you know, in the mid-20s, when all of a sudden it's like, "What are you doing with your life? Blah, 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 blah." They had to get serious as parents because they felt weird anxiety about having been so cool for so long.
I think, like, when our parents were kids, there was kind of an artistic and cultural explosion. And so, and then growing up with that and having, you know, a wave of music and different visual arts come to light, and then also wanting to be able to offer their children things that they couldn't have as kids, like the freedom to explore those artistic realms. Like, that's for sure what happened in my family. They were like, "Do art, you know, do whatever you want, because they weren't given that choice necessarily or supported by their families in doing that.
And your brother's an artist, isn't he?
My brother's an artist, yeah. So it's, you know, I think it's that.
I think it's a classic case of the chickens coming home to roost. It's like you...
I'm not familiar. What? Can you explain that?
Yeah, it's just a metaphor. I don't know. The chickens go out and then they come, you know, the chicken, the metaphorical chicken is your choices years ago. And then the coming home to roost is like the coming to reality of whatever long ago choices you made. but it's like, you know, you act like a cool dad for 20 years and then all of a sudden you expect like, hey, do you know how to open an IRA? Do you like, are you going to be able to buy a house? It's like, I don't know. You, and this is not me speaking to my dad specifically, because he struck a very good balance of cool dad and teaching me real things. But it was, you know, it was like all of a sudden I do know how a mortgage works, or like,
yeah, but the cool thing about our generation is that we can figure all that stuff out. That's why we have smartphones. You Google it, you know. So it's like, even
so, maybe
though
parents feel redundant.
Maybe they feel redundant. Maybe it's like, oh, you know, I didn't teach my children the things that they needed to learn, and now they need to learn them, and they're 25, and I still am not there to lend them that hand. I don't know.
We're getting into some psychoanalysis of parents.
This would be a great time to have my dad just sitting here.
Yeah, each of us will each bring our dads for a panel discussion of how their children wound up so
why we ended up the way that we did.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom. No. So I guess what, besides hurt feelings, is the result of being named a millennial? I mean, I feel like it can go one of two ways. Like, we're either going to fall into it and be like, yeah, this, like, sure, I guess we're that lazy, selfie, self-absorbed generation, and like stay in this negative derogatory sense that people keep trying to portray us as in the media, or we'll get mad and defensive and like rise above it and be like this awesome generation that we know we can be. Which one do you think is gonna happen, you guys?
I don't know. Some people will sink into, and I shouldn't say sink, some people will choose to take it easy, you know. I think like Gen Xers, some people got to be called slackers and just enjoy that label for all it was worth, just like smoke weed and watch TV endlessly, and that was somehow an okay life choice. So I think millennials will, some of us will take that route.
Just inevitably.
Yeah. But then also there are people, this is a weird thought, there are people our age who are literally billionaires as a result of products or websites or whatever they've invented. So they're doing well enough on balance. So I'll let them take the credit for my moderate success in my chosen field.
Is Mark Zuckerberg considered a millennial?
I think so.
Yeah, let's have him just be the voice of our generation.
He facilitated everything. Yeah. So he's our leader. We don't need one, but he is.
Plus Facebook vote. Yo. Ayo, tonight is the night that I'ma get twisted. Mix Moscato and vodka, I'ma mix it. Roll that spaceship,
we about to get lifted. Live in the present and gift this for the gifted. This what you came. I've been finding myself listening to a lot more pop music, and not necessarily the indie pop music of the last, you know, 7 years that I've gotten into, like top 40 countdown, top of the charts pop music, and I am loving it. I love it so much. It's like this guilty pleasure that's no longer guilty, because I'm ready to talk about it and what that is. Do you guys feel that way at all?
Absolutely.
I'm indifferent. I don't really get into pop music, but you know, what is getting your fancy on?
I don't know, like it's, I don't know, it, when you look at like the sheet music for pop music now, not that there really is sheet music anymore, but if you look at the chords for pop music, it's all the same things that have been used for 60 years or whatever. Like the structure of a pop song now is more or less the same as it was when Phil Spector was writing them.
That is so true, because I'm taking piano lessons right now, and all of these songs can be written with like four chords.
GDF, man.
And yeah.
EAD.
F and G.
Yeah. It's crazy. They're all, and there's just, I mean, people say it all the time, there is something universal and, I don't know, timeless about a lot of it. It just happens to be, you know, people will bemoan how loud pop music is now in comparison to how it used to be. Like it's
mixed louder. And the production is so different,
It's a lot more garish, but it's still enjoyable. And there's really nothing wrong with a really well-written pop song, in my opinion. It took me a long time to come around to that. Like, I was very much a hater for many years. And then I was like, you know what? This is actually, I love it.
Yeah, I remember in college, well, when we were all working at Radio K, mm-hmm. I was very adamant about only listening to indie music or alternative radio stations. And I would be in the car with my parents, and they would put on, you know, like the top 40 stations. And I would get so mad. And I'd be like, mm-hmm. this music is so bad. Like, how can you listen to this? Please turn it off. You know, being an angsty, like 19-year-old sure. or whatever. But I truly believe that pop music is getting better. Like, I think it's on an upswing significantly.
Yeah.
Like, even just from 4 or 5 years ago, mm-hmm. when, like, this time that I was talking about, like, I think it's really good. And I think it appeals to a lot. A wider variety mm-hmm. of people now. And I love it. It's yeah. so good.
I guess maybe I'm still in that hate stage, but I definitely know when I hear a good pop song. It's just that I don't go out and, you know, I don't go and Google it and listen to it.
You don't repeat one.
You don't right. seek out.
I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In your defense, yeah. you're the only one that is still working at it, like a music radio station.
Yeah.
That's not
We're all,
commercial.
We all became yeah. Mainstream stooges.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, it's like that like endless replayability is I used to really be hardcore about I would say like I don't repeat one songs. Like I listen to whole albums because somehow that made me a more astute learned
of
music
course.
Listener to yeah. like yeah, I consider the artist's whole statement instead of the song they want you to hear, but like I have totally abandoned that. You
well,
know I mean
pop
I still
music,
listen to
music that's not necessarily
yeah,
the case
it's a singles
albums.
Format
it's a singles,
genre
yeah
but yeah that idea of like somehow considering a whole artistic document I still do that but I also have room for you know cotton candy or whatever in my music diet.
So what songs are you guys excited about lately? What should I be listening to? What should I Google?
Okay, I'm really obsessed with the new Nicki Minaj album. Do you ever think of me when you lie down in your bed,
your bed of lies, and I knew better. Pink paw print, pink.
Pink print.
Pink see, print. I don't listen to Nicki Minaj, but somehow I know that.
But you pick that up.
But it's because, see, it's on Pitchfork, though. Like, it's somehow in the last 5 years, mm-hmm. 5 to 10 years, it became acceptable for indie music publications like Pitchfork to also be writing about Drake and Nicki Minaj and Taylor Swift.
I think it's because
they realized the same thing, that like they used to be haters and then they were like, wait a minute,
this
is actually
this.
I think part of it has to do with like the mainstream appreciation. Basically like top 40 came around to R&B, mm-hmm. which Pitchfork was always kind of on. I mean, like, I think that was honestly a very big access point for a lot
totally.
Of people, was like, we listen to this unheard of R&B artist. And then all of a sudden that artist became famous, so it became crossovery.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you listen to just the, you know, top 5 radio stations in Minneapolis, like the alternative stations and the pop stations will be playing similar songs. I mean, mm-hmm. the same songs. Like, I've heard the same songs on the mm-hmm. radio stations. So there is so much crossover now.
Right.
And I think that it's, it's like the indie kids in stations are like, it's like a certain self-awareness, and it's like, oh well, it's okay now, like we can like these things, like mm-hmm. we don't need to feel this way anymore. And then at the same time, like the top 40 stuff is being like, oh, but that stuff is cool, so we'll play some of that. Like, it's mm-hmm. this weird, both groups are wanting something that they can have and I think are now having.
Yeah, I remember the one that did it for me was Katy Perry, Teenage Dream. Yeah, I just remember, like, the first time I heard that song, I was like, I'm sure I said, like, oh, God,
yeah.
blah, blah, blah. But in my head, I was like, whoa.
Like,
whoa.
This is
Yeah,
amazing.
And so ever since then, it's been a gradual process of, like, you know what? Anything is on the table. So I appreciate the well-written pop song, but a lot of it does sound very similar.
Yeah.
You know, it's using a vocabulary that's like, this is my 60s song, and this is, and it's like people now are referencing past musical genres and trends as though all music of that time sounded. So people basically now can say, I'm going to make my 80s record.
Right.
And 80s implies like the Phil Collins drum sound and huge banks of keyboards, that kind of, I'm thinking specifically of Taylor Swift. Like,
right.
It's a very kind of Miami Vice-y sound, but it's kind of like that seems lazy.
You know what song I'm really into now that's kind of borrowing from another era is that Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars song. That is such a good song.
I dance in the car every day to that song. It's so hard. It's not. That kind of has like made me realize my new like acceptance of pop music was that song. Because it's so good.
It is good.
It's so
a jam.
Good.
Hallelujah. Because Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Because Uptown Funk. Just watch. Don't believe me, just watch.
It's called Uptown Funk by Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars.
And as the title would imply, it's like an updated Prince and the Revolution song. It's like very much the Minneapolis sound, which might be part of why so much of this music is more accessible to us now, is because it's like familiar, cool, acceptable artists of our childhoods, Prince in this case, all of a sudden being used in a top 40 context, and it's like, okay, now I can like this top 40 song. Maybe. I don't know if that's the definitive answer, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I've said this before, but our generation is quite obsessed with nostalgia, and like we have all of this kind of unwarranted nostalgia for no reason, like nostalgia for Prince or, you know, those sounds. I mean, I know like a lot of people are Prince fans, but I think that maybe since pop music is starting to play into that a little bit more, maybe that's where everything's going.
I just want the big, truly crossover record where it's like, I don't know, whereas, you know, there was kind of a weird subset of hip hop in the 90s that was a lot of like jazz samples, and some of those were hit songs, but there hasn't been, I just want the pop song that is a chart topper that uses a totally kind of unheard of musical vocabulary, whether that's like, you know, a weird jazz song or like a Sade song or something. But I don't know where it's going to come from, because a lot of this music does sound the same. It's really, you know, really loud drums, really loud vocals. It hurts your ears if you listen to it and your earbuds too loud.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where the future lies, unless it's just going to be more like G, A minor, C, perfectly written song right there.
My favorite chords, yeah.
I think the artists themselves can also have this like normcore feel to them, you know, not just their music, but think about Lorde when she crossed over last year. Mm. She's just like, she was kind of marketed as this like weird teenage girl, kind of awkward, goth looking, you know, very relatable for several teenage girls across the world.
Lorde is a perfect example. She's literally just like a normal person who writes these songs, is the, you know, the narrative we received. And a big part of her fame was just like, she came out this way. Like she's just,
no, she's really weird. She's a human just like you.
Yeah. Huh. Maybe that's the next trend in music, is not so much sound as like authenticity. You know, that's what a lot of pop stars now will say, you know, I'm just being me, just being Miley. But I don't know if that's a reality. So, Leah, backing up a little, Tess and I have been stupidly taken by pop music.
Oh,
how have you held out?
Well, okay, so I don't know about you guys, but I do not believe in guilty pleasures. I think you should like what you like, and that's just what it is. I don't think guilty pleasures, you should be ashamed of them. But for pop music, it just hasn't struck a chord with me. Mm-hmm. I really like lyrical content. Like I said, I'm a huge Modest Mouse fan, and Isaac Brock is probably one of the best lyricists of our time, in my opinion, along with Stephen Malcolmus, for example, in Pavement, or there's lots, but lyrical content is important to me, and I don't think you get that from pop music.
Yeah, I think it, like, pop music definitely serves just an entirely different purpose. Like, it's not, for me, it's not necessarily like scripture that, you know, I'm mm-hmm. how I view other music that I'm really passionate about, like lyrics and the actual artistry of the music. I don't feel that way about pop music, but to be able to, in the car, you know, plug in a song or turn the radio to some song that has some crazy, awesome, infectious beat, and to be able to jam out, like, that's something that I didn't let myself do mm-hmm. for the last, you know, 7 years, because I felt this shame, I felt this guilt that you're talking about. And now I'm like, I'm honestly not sure what the shift has been. Maybe it was that kind of like Pitchfork taking mm-hmm. on this pop culture. I'm not sure what it was, but now I feel comfortable being able to do that, and it just serves this entirely different, like,
yeah.
It's like a soulful purpose, but in like a very superficial way.
And this is a very specific conversation, I think, that happens among like self-labeled music lovers. And, you know, we all worked at a radio station that has a very good music pedigree. And I think part of becoming like transitioning from like a young music lover into like a fully fledged music adult is that you have to take it super seriously and like learn from what you're listening and really engage with it. And I think unlearning that behavior takes a while. Like, only now in my mid-20s did I ever allow myself, you know, I completely missed out on everything my friends were listening to in high school because I was so focused on like, who's putting out this record? Where did this come from? Blah, blah, blah. The sort of like connecting the dots of music when, you know, I could have been just having more fun. Finally, I learned to do both.
Yeah.
You know, I can have my sweet and savory.
Yeah. I've just been such a passive pop music listener. I mean, mm-hmm. I know all the pop songs. It's just that I don't go out and, you know, Google them and listen to them on my own time. If they come into contact with me in everyday life, mm-hmm. fine. Yeah.
That's a good way to think about it.
But as far as like indie rock world stuff, I mean, I sound like such a music snob, guys. This is bad.
No.
But there are songs that like I jam out to that are kind of like pop indie songs, mm-hmm. you know, that just mm-hmm. haven't crossed over. For example, mm-hmm. like Always the band, mm-hmm. it's like two V's instead mm-hmm. of W, but
yeah.
they have this song called Archie Marry Me.
I love that song.
It's such a song you want to listen to and jam along with, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to go and buy that and put it in my iTunes store. No.
Same with the song, the one that I tweeted at you about, the Kate Tempest
Circles
song. That song comes on and I'm jamming in the car, and you know, that's like she started as a spoken word artist and then put beats behind it, and now it's music. So, I mean, it's kind of like definition of like indie, right? And that's a jammer, too.
No.
So.
I think obsessibility can be found anywhere in music. It just is like the stated focus of pop music is like, you will listen to this so many times and you will not get sick of it.
Yeah.
But you find that in any genre. I have many, many indie songs that are just repeat ones.
Yeah.
It's like, that's my category, is like songs I will listen to on repeat one. There's plenty of indie in there. It's a variety. So before we go, what will be your repeat one song when you go home tonight?
We're kind of at that lull in the year where it's like there's not much new stuff coming out.
It's just anticipating.
Right.
My number one repeat, is that what you call it, Alex?
Yeah, your repeat one.
My repeat one is Bed of Lies by Nicki Minaj.
I'm going to listen to Queen by Perfume Genius.
Nice.
On repeat.
That was a great lawn mowing song for me this past summer. It was on a little playlist. It was great.
It's good. I recently just got into that album, so it's still fresh in my mind.
Mine's probably Kate Bush, Wuthering Heights.
Mm.
Just going to jam out on that. It's very crystalline, which is wintry to me.
How did that pop back into your mind?
I don't know. I had it also on a playlist, and I rediscovered it at the gym, and I was like, this is really, really wonderful. So I'm just going to listen to that a bunch. Well, we'd love for you to tell us what songs you'll be repeat wanting after you get done with the podcast here. Tweet at us with the hashtag #PopTillWeDrop.
And remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes.
And that's all. Thanks, and we'll see you guys next time. Through the heights.
keep me.